Welcome to New World Notes, a series that explores the gap between the America we want and the America they're trying to make us settle for, and how we the people can reestablish our commonwealth and reclaim our democracy. Edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. I think we can say that, with three subjects, our corporate-controlled media go beyond their usual militarist capitalist bias. With these subjects, the media plunge to the depths of churning out propaganda so biased, so perverse, so full of distortions, that brainwashing would not be too extreme a term to describe what they're doing. What could these subjects be, I hear you cry? Your mileage may vary, but I'd say they are 1. The American style of globalized corporate capitalism, 2. War, and 3. Israel. And when it comes to 42 years of occupation and destruction of Gaza and the West Bank, you've got all three. So we get the perfect storm, or more precisely, the perfect storm of organic fertilizer. In 2003, the Media Education Foundation released a fine video documentary analyzing fairly and well how the media cover what they call the Palestinian crisis. It explains why the news coverage in this country is so unfair, misleading, and one-sided, and it shows in detail the 7 techniques they use to deceive and mislead the public. Today the video seems a little quaint, but only in superficial ways, like the names of political leaders. Hey, anybody remember Yasser Arafat? Ariel Sharon? Well, you probably won't soon forget G.W. Bush. He's another figure in this rogues gallery. Unfortunately, 99% of the film's details are just as true today as they were in 2003. I've adapted the film to radio in 3 parts, which we'll hear over the course of a couple of months. I don't want to have 3 consecutive shows all dedicated to blood, gore, lies, and injustice. I promise we'll break up the doom and gloom with some lighter installments. Today, though, here is the first of the 3 parts. The documentary's name is Peace, Propaganda, and the Promised Land, U.S. Media and the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict. Without further ado... In 1967, following a war between Israel and the countries of Syria, Jordan, and Egypt, Israel militarily occupied the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem. That year, the United Nations Security Council passed Resolution 242, calling on Israel to withdraw from the occupied territories. Israel has yet to comply. Today, 3 million Palestinians live under illegal military occupation. Today, the lives of both Israelis and Palestinians are plagued by daily violence and insecurity.
The Israeli-Palestinian conflict dominates American news coverage of international issues. Given that news coverage is Americans' main source of information on the conflict, it becomes important to examine the stories the news media are telling us and to ask the question, does the news coverage reflect the reality on the ground?
Noam Chomsky, professor of linguistics, MIT.
The West Bank and the Gaza Strip are under a military occupation. It's the longest military occupation in modern history. It's entering its 35th year. It's a harsh and brutal military occupation. And it's extremely violent. All the time. Life is being made unlivable for the population.
Gila Svirsky, an Israeli woman representing the Coalition of Women for a Just Peace.
we have what is now of quite an oppressive regime in the occupied territories, where Israelis are lording it over Palestinians, usurping their territory, demolishing their homes, exerting a very severe form of military rule in order to remain there. And on the other hand, Palestinians are lashing back, trying to throw off the yoke of oppression of the Israelis.
I spent a day traveling around Gaza with a man named Jabra Washa, who's from the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, and he described the situation as complete economic and social suffocation. There's no economy. The unemployment is over 60% now. Crops can't move. Thousands and thousands of acres of orchards and low-lying crops have been bulldozed and uprooted by the Israeli military. There are checkpoints everywhere. Palestinians can't get from one place to another. Drives that ordinarily would take 10 minutes now take 4 hours.
All the main access and artery roads are controlled by Israel. Anything that enters and exits the Palestinian areas is underneath their control. And so everything from getting medical help to getting education to trying to lead your daily life is at the whim of Israel.
There are hundreds of checkpoints in the West Bank. Every Palestinian has to walk through a single ride, 2-3 checkpoints. And the system of those checkpoints makes Palestinian ordinary people's life miserable.
We are trying to get to Jerusalem. They won't let us pass. Look, here are my papers. See, they are all from my insurance and the hospital, and nobody will let us pass. I don't know why it's forbidden. Aren't we human beings? Gila Svirsky.
It can even reach very immediate forms of oppression, such as not being able to leave your homes during curfew hours, as the Palestinians are forced sometimes to remain in their home day after day because the Israeli army says, we don't want you out of the house on the street. It means they can't buy food, can't send their children to school, can't walk across the street to their neighbors, can't get medical attention, can't do any of the basic things that you must leave your home to do. So that's really... That's a horrible way to live your life.
Rabbi Michael Lerner.
Since the Intifada number 2 began, you have a much heightened level of repression. Often these towns or villages are surrounded by the Israeli army, and people aren't allowed to go out of their village to the next to next door. It's basically a horrendous situation. It's like living in a very big jail.
When one lives under oppression and there is no other way out and he's being violated every day by violent means, then sometimes the only way out of that situation is through violence.
The video shows a rocky hillside. Two men are sitting on the ground, surrounded by 4 soldiers. The soldiers repeatedly hit and kick the 2 men in the face. Now one soldier is picking up a rock and hitting one man's backbone with it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 blows. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. The picture fades out before the blows cease.
Particularly if the one that is violating your rights and taking away your freedom is ruthless and uses systematic methods of violence to oppress you, like torture.
Amnesty International has regularly documented serious human rights violations by Israeli military forces in the occupied territories, including unlawful killings, torture and ill treatment of prisoners, wanton destruction of homes with residents still inside, the blocking of ambulances, denial of humanitarian assistance, and the use of Palestinian civilians as human shields, and has gone so far as to label them war crimes.
We don't see the suffering that the Palestinians are undergoing through occupation. We don't really understand how bad the occupation is for them. No empathy, no sympathy, no sight of women unable to reach a hospital to give birth and children and their babies dying at the checkpoint because they can't get through. If you don't see that, your heart doesn't skip a beat and say something's wrong with the occupation.
That's what's become so twisted, that the dearth of reporting, the absence of images, the lack of analysis, the void of voices of describing the experience of Palestinians under occupation is so vast that people have no idea that an occupation is going on.
Section 2, American Media, Occupied Territory. A close look at the Israeli propaganda machine.
CBS Evening News.
Americans rely on the news media for information about events occurring around the world. News, especially television news, exerts a powerful influence on our perceptions, telling us which events are important and shaping our understanding of the issues. Given the central role played by the United States in the Middle East conflict, and thus the vital role played by American voters, influencing U.S. media coverage of the conflict is crucial. Controlling the images and words used to explain the conflict has become an important extension of the struggle.
Israel is really fighting a war on two fronts. The first is a military campaign being waged in the occupied territories against the Palestinian people. And the second is a PR campaign being waged here in the U.S. through the American media to ensure continued support for Israel's occupation. Alon Pincus, Consul General for Israel in New York and the coordinator of Israel's PR efforts, was recently quoted as saying, "We are currently in a conflict with the Palestinians, and engaging in a successful PR campaign is part of winning the conflict."
The roots of Israel's public relations campaign go back to the 1982 Israeli invasion of Lebanon that earned it worldwide criticism, in particular the massacre of Palestinian civilians at the refugee camps of Sabra and Shatila. To the Israeli government, the problem was not the deaths of thousands of civilians. Rather, it was the damage to Israel's public image, a public relations disaster in need of damage control.
British journalist Robert Fisk.
They surrounded Beirut. In 3 months, 17,500 people, almost all of them civilians, were killed. I saw many thousands of their bodies. Then came the massacre of Sabra and Shatila by Israel's own allies as the camp was surrounded by Israeli troops. And they desperately said, what went wrong? It was concluded that the problem was there wasn't good enough public relations.
After the public relations disaster of Lebanon, Israel decided to set up permanent institutional structures to control how Americans would think about the Middle East. In 1983, Israel launched the Hasbara project, the aim of which was to ensure good press in the U.S. media. The goal was to train Israeli diplomats in communications and public relations. For example, they trained press officers in Israeli consulates in the U.S. to ensure that American journalists would write stories favorable to Israel. As one of these press officers said in the 1980s, he had breakfast, lunch, and dinner with journalists, and that a typical day would involve conversations with producers at leading news and TV talk shows about the content of the program. He described it as, in fact, quote, a joint formulation of ideas. This targeting of the American media goes on in the present day.
The Israeli press office is spitting out press releases, statements, information all the time. So you could sit in a bureau in Jerusalem and file stories from there all the time without really having to have much imagination or have much energy or have much drive. The Palestine Authority press office is almost useless, and they certainly aren't providing you with ready-made stories the way the Israeli press office is.
Because of lack of access to Palestinian officials in the West Bank and the sophistication of Israel's PR techniques inside Israel. A lot of times the stories are already tilted in Israel's favor before they ever leave American journalists sitting in the area.
When you're talking about how the story is covered from the U.S., the propaganda machine is even more effective than it is in Israel.
American news coverage is influenced by a complex set of institutional relationships. These influences can be thought of as a series of filters through which the news must travel before it emerges in the voices of news anchors. To understand how American news media report on the Middle East conflict, we need to understand how these institutional filters operate. Among the most important of these filters are the business interests of the corporations that own the mass media, interests that extend beyond the United States and across the globe to the Middle East. The economic interests of media owners are shared by political elites, politicians, and policymakers who form a second filter. These political elites have the power to access and influence mainstream media and are themselves part of a system dominated by corporate money and interests. The strategic importance of the Middle East to these two groups is reflected in media coverage of the region and of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. A third filter, Israel's own public relations efforts, further affects the coverage. The government of Israel employs some of the largest American public relations firms as image consultants to coordinate its political and media campaigns. 9 Israeli consulates help implement these PR campaigns by developing relationships with journalists and monitoring media outlets. Scores of private American organizations, both Christian and Jewish, reiterate the official line and organize grassroots opposition to any coverage deemed unfavorable to Israel. The most important of these is APAC, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, widely regarded as the most powerful foreign lobby in Washington. This institutional framework of American business and political interests in combination with Israeli public relations shapes media coverage of the Middle East. At the same time, those progressive organizations opposing Israeli government policy, such as Jews Against the Occupation and Americans for Peace Now, rarely make it through these filters. Finally, if any news stories critical of Israeli policy do surface, there are a host of media watchdog groups that monitor and pressure journalists and media outlets, the most important of which is CAMRA.
You have activist organizations from the right, the pro-Israeli right, that very effectively, they say monitor, I would say harass, journalists and their editors and try to make sure that the coverage is objective, by which they mean pro-Israel.
The abuse against a journalist is something you just have to take into account. If you, you know, both literally and metaphorically, if you work in the Middle East, you've got to take the sticks and stones. What I object to is that my American colleagues don't seem to be prepared to do that.
And even in Israel itself, you know, you can find the main daily newspapers, like Haaretz, for example, provides coverage on the ground and analysis, some of which has views on the conflict that you would never, that would be almost beyond the pale for an American journalist, say, at the New York Times to write.
Some headlines from stories in the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. Primordial illogic and primitive cruelty. Israel obsessed with its PR image, not with morality. Our foppish self-righteousness. And a quotation, "We are a greedy occupier, looting their land, uprooting, and demolishing and expelling."
The main major television news networks and newspapers in the United States have long ago got their fear to be supreme over their duties as journalists. They are not monitoring the centers of power when it comes to the relationship between America and the Middle East, Israel and America, and America and the Arabs and the Palestinians. They will not ask the right questions, they will not report it using the correct words, they will not confront the reality, and they've given up. And I think once you acquire fear, it's very difficult to get rid of it.
Let's take a break for some music. Afterwards, the documentary will return. We've heard a discussion of why the media lies and distorts the way it does. We'll begin an analysis of the seven ways in which it does succeed in lying and distorting. The show will end with the first way. That way is hiding the fact that Israel is engaged in a military occupation of Gaza and the West Bank. First, though, I found this cut on Chumbawamba's website, available for free download. It's by a group from the Czech Republic. The group's name is Gapils. This is a great a cappella version of Jacob's Ladder, Not in My Name.
Jacob's Ladder. Like a serum on the mountain, says Damaganda. Hellfire and brimstone, sweat, foil and gum. When we're pushing up daisies, we all look the same. In the name of the Father, maybe, but not in my name.
On this Jacob's ladder, the only way up is down. One step from disaster, and two to make a higher ground. Jacob's ladder, ladder.
And they send him to the wars to be slain, to be slain. And they send him to the wars to be slain.
A million lifetimes left dying in the sun. And the streets out at Whitehall, dogs picking at the bones. 9/11 got branded, 9/11 got sold. And there'll be no more left to order all the seeds you sow.
On this Jacob's ladder, the only way up is down. One step from disaster, and two to make a higher ground. Jacob's ladder, ladder, ladder.
And they send him to the wars to be slain, to be slain. And they send him to the wars to be slain.
And they send him to the wars to be slain, to be slain. And they send him to the wars to be slain. On this Jacob's ladder, the only way up is down. One step from disaster, and two to make a higher ground. On this Jacob's ladder, the only way up is down. One step from disaster, and two to make a higher ground. Jacob's ladder, ladder.
Section 3, PR Strategy Number 1, Hidden Occupation.
One of the things you have to keep in mind when you're looking at how media report on something like the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is not only understanding what's there in the story, but more importantly, what's not there, what's being left out. In that sense, absence is as vital as presence in terms of how people make sense of the story. Context is everything.
The context that's often missing from the current reporting is that the Palestinian uprising is a revolt against the 34-year-long occupation. And if there's no occupation in the story, then the story doesn't really make sense, and the occupation is frequently missing.
A typical TV news report, for example, on, you know, ABC News, we'll show dramatic pictures of these confrontations where Palestinians are confronting Israeli troops and the Israeli troops are responding.
But Friday saw more clashes in Hebron between stone-throwing Palestinian youths and Israeli soldiers armed with
For most Americans who don't understand the history of the conflict, this is an example of riots that are going on where the authorities are taking measures to crack down. What's not mentioned is the fact that these confrontations are taking place on occupied territory, that the Israeli troops who are there are defending an occupation that doesn't have any international legitimacy, that's illegal.
The American media, they are concentrating only on the deeds, on the violence, and not on the reasons, and not on the basic facts of occupation.
Israeli troops were pelted with stones, and they responded with tear gas and rubber bullets.
This is not presented as an army using its arsenal against young people who are largely unarmed and who are protesting because of the occupation, the siege, the total oppression of a whole nation.
The lack of context is so dramatic that only 4% of the network news reports on the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip mention that the West Bank and Gaza Strip are occupied.
The Israeli military sends its troops into the occupied territories to defend what is considered an illegal occupation. And when the population there resists, Israel is presented as being under attack.
Israel was responding to an attack today.
Israel has beefed up forces following a Palestinian mortar attack.
They don't present it as saying Israel is the aggressor, Israel is killing people on their own land, in their own homes as an occupier. But no, Israel is defending itself.
To Sharon, the West Bank invasion is simple self-defense.
The Israeli Prime Minister reiterated Israel's right to self-defense.
Israel's basic posture is anything but defensive. Israel is the only country in the world right now which, in contravention to UN Security Council resolutions, maintains tens of thousands of heavily armed troops outside its borders in somebody else's country for the sole purpose of taking their land away from them and in the process forcing them to live under the worst form of tyranny imaginable, which is a foreign military dictatorship.
The tanks, the gunships, the snipers, they are all on Palestinian land. And I don't see why they have to protect themselves on our land if they're occupying our land. That context is always missing.
A crowd throwing stones and homemade stun grenades at the soldiers. The troops opening fire, killing two Palestinians and injuring...
So even when Israel is busy murdering people in cold blood, it is always presented as part of the self-defense mechanism of Israel.
When Israel in the occupied territories now claim that they have to defend themselves, they are defending themselves in the sense that any military occupier has to defend itself against the population they're crushing.
Prime Minister Ariel Sharon justified the siege as self-defense.
You can't defend yourselves when you're militarily occupying somebody else's land. That's not defense. Call it what you like, it's not defense.
Thanks for listening. New World Notes is produced for WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. For the film Peace Propaganda and the Promised Land, our thanks to the Media Education Foundation. New World Notes is available off the air by internet stream, podcast, or MP3 download at your convenience. There's an archive of shows you can download. There's also a weekly newsletter and a blog. All is free. For more information, start at the blog. We're at http://newworldnotes.blogspot.com. No www, just newworldnotes.blogspot.com. To receive the newsletter, email a note to kdoust, that's KDOWST, at hotmail.com. The opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the views of anyone here, including our gracious host and licensee, and they are protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Your feedback on this program is most welcome. You can leave a comment at the blog or else email me at, once again, kdowst@hotmail.com. From Darkest New England, this is Kenneth Doust, wishing you a good week and advising, illegitimi non carborundum, keep the faith, and please tune in again.